you, don't you worry. If you were in a hurry, Bob with Curry and Claypo. Curry and Claypo. No matter how your day go, they got a fresh new show today. It's Curry and Claypo. Whether you up north of Gardendale or down south past Vestavia, turn up your sound and listen well, cause we got something to say to you. Curry and Claypo, they in the know. Their topics cover A to Z. So whether you drive fast or slow, just sit on back and feel the beat.
Hey,
oh, no.
It's Curry and Claypo.
Claypo. I'll let you start the show off today.
All right. I appreciate you turning off Baywatch. Although you did.
Oh, I did. Hold on.
A little line inside me, people killing things. So you know that I have a hard time. Particularly if you get, like, if I get boring or if you get boring, then I'm off on that. But no, good weekend. Did you watch some college football? No, nothing. I think it's not Nick Saban. I feel like Alabama does it just to keep us, you know, just to keep us in. Like,
well, you know, I put out a video on Saturday, my little prediction, and I said, I was talking to my son, and I was trying to figure out, because I've been going under this thing thinking that Georgia, it was Georgia and everyone else.
Right.
And I'm thinking, okay, this is going to be tough. First time in 6 years, Alabama was an underdog. So as a handicapper, risk-reward kind of guy,
yeah.
I'm sitting there going, okay, the last two times they were underdogs, they won outright and convincingly. They have the Heisman Trophy winner at quarterback. They have the greatest college football coach of all time.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't even appear that it's not even going down yet. And that's assuming he's got three or four more years left in him. So he knows, hey, listen, we got to make some hay now.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I'm thinking to myself, we haven't really talked about Georgia a whole lot. Because they've been so good, and
yeah,
was like, okay, Georgia,
it's just
Georgia. It's kind of like, was it Kentucky one year? It was kind of like Kentucky or the field in the basketball tournament.
Right. That's right.
And then I'm not winning that year. And I'm thinking to myself, okay. And so I'm thinking, if I'm Nick Saban, the defensive coordinators, you know, Marona's guys, I'm going, hey, listen, aren't you guys sick and tired of hearing about how great this defense is? And what was supposed to make Alabama as good as they appear to be at this point now was their defense. That was the way they were going to make it to the national championship game this year. And obviously that defense has been a little erratic.
Yeah.
But if you go game by game, it really isn't that erratic. And they've had a couple of games where it's like, what just happened here? And then, of course, you throw in the Auburn game last week where they don't score in the first three quarters. And you're like, how are they going to score against Georgia? And, I mean, it's matchups.
Yes.
We see it in the National Football League every weekend. One week a team is up 28-0. The next week they can't score a point. It's matchups. And, you know, and then I threw in the whole, there's only been one coach that has beaten Nick Saban that was under his tutelage. And that, of course, happened earlier this year with A&M. And so I'm like, I'm going, there's no reason not to take Bama plus the points here. I don't know if they'll win. I didn't think they'd win. But then I started thinking to myself, why wouldn't they? And I thought the defense was going to be the reason. And it turned out to be the offense just lights out, got it done. But it's a game of inches. Georgia turned the football over, couldn't make third down conversions, couldn't get to the quarterback, had zero sacks. I mean, and Kirby Smart said it afterwards. He said if he looked at the stat sheet, I'd say we probably lost this football game, and they did.
You know, it's interesting. You know, they always say, and they say in basketball, but it goes for every sport on any given day or any given night.
Yeah.
And it is true. I mean, when teams are not closely matched, but particularly when teams are closely matched, on any given day or any given night, and I know Nick Saban always stresses this, and every coach does, you know, you got to do what you need to do every single game. That's what we practice. But it's interesting to me because it's human behavior to be off.
Yeah.
Like we're not machines. We're really not.
And I know you can only be off once a year.
Well, that's what I mean.
Because no two lost teams ever made it in. So you get one game where you can lose it. And you're usually not supposed to – you're not allowed to lose a game late. Now that changes because obviously you have to be near the top to lose that game, and Georgia did, and they made it in.
And you can't be – and being off, at particularly at this level, I mean, you don't have to have a horrible game.
Yeah.
Right? You can be off. What's interesting to me, and it's different in – obviously in baseball. It's different in National Basketball Association, NBA. It's even different in college basketball. In football, there's so few games. you know, you watch, particularly in pro basketball.
Yeah.
You know, but baseball, same thing.
Yeah. Man, you lose six or seven games in a row. It's no
big deal. Exactly. Yeah. But, I mean, that's the thing. The ability to be on, particularly as college athletes, and be on almost perfectly.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, something they're not talking about, too, is and the, we're talking about 17, 18, 19-year-old kids, right?
Well, that's kind of what I'm...
To go into that game as a Georgia Bulldog, and I know the SEC Championship game is important, and I understand you want to hang your banner. But let's face it, I'll give up an SEC championship game all year for a national championship appearance, right? To play in the national championship game. To go into that game knowing you could lose and you're still okay.
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
No one talked about that. No one said,
that's right.
Listen, we're kids. I know I could lose this and I'm still going to be playing in the championship.
And it's back here.
And I'm not saying that Georgia camp's soft. I'm not saying they play it differently. I'm just saying, but this is the same. It's the same moniker of you know, when a team just has a huge win against a particular team, and Alabama just did that against Auburn, there's going to be that letdown.
Yes.
Or you're playing that Kent or Central Michigan, and you're not going to play your best game because you know you should blow them out by 30. And it's just human nature.
Well, and it's mental.
Yeah.
It's mental, and that's the thing I think that is so hard.
The mental is the hardest part.
Well, it's hard for coaches because you can't.
You can sit there and tell them all day long, don't do it, it ain't going to work, and they don't care. You know?
Well, and even if they care, we've all done this.
Yeah.
I always tell it to relationships, we all do this. It's like, God, I knew that. I knew I wasn't supposed to do that, but I did it.
Yeah.
Right? It happens all the time.
The other two things I thought were really interesting, and I tweeted this out, it is truly a game of inches. The way the Oklahoma State game ended against Baylor was heart-wrenching. Yeah. They literally came 4 inches short.
Yep.
From playing in the national championship. If Oklahoma State wins that game, they're getting the spot, and Cincinnati probably is not. And so that was heart-wrenching to see that. And Baylor didn't score a point in the second half. I can't believe they won that football game. The other one is Cincinnati did get in as a group of five team for the first time ever. Boise State was that team for years.
That's right.
I know what they did against Oklahoma in the bowl game.
Right.
I saw that stuff, but they were never. And so for Cincinnati to finally get in.
That's great.
I think a lot of it had to do with social media. The media coverage, the location, people aren't following Boise because it's way out there.
Yeah.
Cincinnati's a Midwestern team. More people were watching. Cincinnati was on TV a lot earlier than Boise State games were at that point in time. So I think that helped.
That sucks.
It does.
I know, but you'd think that those factors.
That's the way it is.
Yeah.
I'm
only undefeated.
The other thing, well, they did go undefeated, and they had the worst strength of schedule out of any team in the top 25. And they were just getting by in some games against the Tulsas of the world. They did have a nice championship game there in their conference championship. So congratulations to Luke Fickell and the quarterback and, of course, the rest of the Bearcats. I'm from Cincinnati, so people are like, are you happy to see this? I am happy to see this. I threw it out. Are we picking the four best teams? Or are we picking the four most deserving teams? I do think you can have both. And in this particular case, Bama's favored by 14.5 in the game against Cincinnati. I thought that was a little low. I thought it would have been about 18 or 19. But Cincinnati, listen, they got it done. I'm a blind resume test guy. I love when they put the blind resume up. They do it in March Madness all the time.
Right.
And they do that so you'll pick the wrong team. And if you do a blind resume between Notre Dame and Cincinnati, you're going to take Notre Dame 70% of the time.
Because of
the blind resume, because of the strength of schedule. And the fact that the team that didn't make it in is Notre Dame, and they played the team that made it in, is amazing to me. Because if Notre Dame was any other football team, I think Cincinnati doesn't get in. But because of the head-to-head, tiebreaker.
Yes.
If Notre Dame was Oregon.
Yeah,
and Oregon hadn't played Cincinnati, and Oregon had the same resume as Notre Dame did. I think Oregon gets in, and I think the committee looks at that and they say, "Listen, but because of the head-to-head, it was going to be a tough sell." And I said this earlier. I think a one-loss Notre Dame, despite they lost to Cincinnati. By the way, that line was only 2 when they played, so it was a pretty evenly matched game. I'm not saying Cincinnati wouldn't beat Notre Dame again, but I think Notre Dame's a better football team now than Cincinnati is now to play. That being said, I'm happy for the Bearcats. I think it's great.
Plus, it cleans things up with the Brian Kelly thing.
That's the other part. You know, I couldn't help but think, listen, the committee is like, we don't look at, they were asked the question about, are we going to match it up to make sure that Alabama doesn't play Georgia again?
Right.
Are we going to make sure that what if Notre Dame, we were going to have a, because they don't like it. They don't care about that. They say they don't care about that. They're human.
Right.
And so the human element came in for me thinking, man, I hope Notre Dame does make it in because right. I want Brian Kelly to suffer. I want him to know that
it's
he can play for
yeah. I mean, yeah.
And so, you know, that would have been pretty cool. People hate Notre Dame, and so I think that's good for college football. People hate Alabama, too. That's the funny part about the whole Alabama thing is, and they even said it on ESPN, everyone's rooting against Alabama. Everybody sure. was rooting against Alabama, sure. with the exception of Alabama, because it was going to help other teams get in if
sure.
Alabama loses
Plus
their
it's
time.
Always Alabama.
And then, of course, the story was, well, could have two-loss Alabama. What if right. they played Georgia close? I mean, it didn't matter.
Listen, you're right. You cross over to other sport. This is Kentucky basketball,
yeah.
or at least historically sure. it's Kentucky yeah. basketball. It is. It's you hate Alabama because you're sick of them winning.
Yeah.
I will tell you, because I always watch the postgame, love to see Nick Saban on the field with his interviews. Mm-hmm. This is the second one I've seen. I mean, he's done more, but back to back, he was smiling.
Oh, yeah.
And it wasn't just smiling. There's an emotion there. There was joy.
Yeah.
It wasn't happiness. There was joy. And the other thing he did, this is not me picking on Coach Saban, because I think he's wonderful. But if you watch, particularly at halftime, he's got this way of interviewing where he'll look at the reporter and he looks in the screen mm-hmm. and it's serious and awkward.
He always looks at the screen.
It's almost like yeah. I know he's not nervous, but it looks like a nervous.
You're not supposed to. For people right. that don't know this, when you do interviews,
you don't look at the camera.
The interviewer always say, "Look at me, don't look at the camera."
Right.
And he will always look right at the camera.
But it looks uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Right. So it was great. It warms my heart to watch him. Just he was soaking it in a way that he usually doesn't yep. and he's on the last few. My other favorite is, and it's whether it's Georgia, it doesn't matter who the losing fan base is, I love when they pan to the audience and the fans and it's dejection.
Yeah.
And actually through the whole game, right? Hope. There's hope. Yep. Then dejection. There's jubilation and dejection. It's just
I think even Nick Saban is surprised at how he pulled this off this year. I think if Alabama wins a national championship this year, this may be the one that he remembers most. And I know that's hard to say.
Was it last year?
First of all, Alabama's never had a Heisman Trophy quarterback ever, mm-hmm. which is hard to believe.
Are you sure? Are you that convinced?
What's that?
That Bryce Young is a shoo-in?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's done. He's going to win a Heisman Trophy. First time in Alabama school history that a quarterback's won the Heisman Trophy.
Yeah.
And Alabama hadn't won a Heisman Trophy until 15, 20 years ago. So that's kind of crazy.
That's really crazy, too, considering how many quarterbacks they put in the NFL.
I can't help but think that after the Auburn game, he was kind of smirky. He was kind of like, wow. How about that? And you never saw that side of him, and I love
that's
that. He's
exactly.
like, yeah. And I mean, he could say all the, you know, we stuck to our roles. We
right.
won our boxes. Everyone
better,
took care of things.
We realized
we
got to
be. Yeah.
No, but he was like,
he was like, that was fun, wasn't it? And then again in the Georgia game, you know, afterwards he's on the selection show yesterday, and he's laughing, and they were talking about the rat poison. Hey, Joey Galloway, who's hilarious, was sitting there saying, "Hey, coach, you always talk about the rat poison the ESPN's throwing out. You know, what do you want us to say now? What do you want to well, tell us? What's the new verbiage? What do you want?" And he laughed about it. And then Kirk Herbstreit said, "I apologize for Joey's question." He's like, "No, it's cool." He's like, "Well, you know, what do you want us to talk about now?" But listen, they're going to tell it the way it is. And Nick Saban is the one that has to be the conduit between what players see and hear and what players need to believe. And so he's like, "Don't listen to that. I'm chopping that up before it gets in your ears. Don't listen to that crap. Don't listen to the polls. Don't listen to the talking heads. Listen to me. Listen, and we're going to be fine." But I think even he is kind of like, the Auburn game to me was like, you can call it destiny. You can call it whatever. I didn't know if there was anything left in the tank after that game because it was like, "Hey, listen, we should have lost that football game."
Yeah.
And so we beat Auburn.
Over.
And so maybe we should just put our tails between our legs and go off and be happy with the season we had. That ain't enough. And now, obviously, they played the most complete game. The defense could have played just a little bit better. But
what do you think about the loss of Minshew?
Minshew, I think, is huge. And the fact that he was untouched, I think, is an absolute monster. The thing we've learned about this football team, though, is, man, guys cannot wait to get in to plug and play. And I'm not saying anyone's as good as Minshew.
No.
We saw it with Devonta. We've seen it with a lot of guys on this football team. The next guy in is like, what the hell?
Well,
I mean, it's like they cannot wait to prove themselves. And it's, in a lot of cases, the players that are playing now in the National Football League were guys that had to come in and play for another guy.
No, I know.
It's stupid crazy,
and
man.
It's great to watch.
It's great.
It's great to watch because you kind of do, unless you're a diehard fan.
Yeah.
Which I'm not a diehard fan. And I love this for any sport. Whoever the next person in is, and you're like, who's that person? I never heard. You know, like, I don't
you're
know.
You're going to know him in 3 weeks.
Right? I'm like, oh, my weeks, God, yeah. Look at them play.
It's crazy.
I love that. I love that about sports.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm watching the Red Zone yesterday, the NFL, and I mean, every time the screen was on, it was Waddle, it was Hurts, it was Tua. It was like every time I turned around, it was another Bama player. It was Fitzpatrick. I was like, dude, I mean, every time.
Look at all the quarterbacks.
It's crazy. It really is crazy. But congratulations to the Crimson Tide. They get it done. They got Cincinnati. They're a 14-point favorite. Michigan, who you can make an argument, is playing some of the greatest football right now, period. They're just hot at the right time. They're a 7-point. I'm sorry. Alabama is a 14-point favorite. They're a 7-point dog to Georgia.
Needs that.
And Kirby is really, really good. We know where he coached for many years.
Yep.
He does a great job at he doesn't have to praise Alabama.
No.
He doesn't have to praise Nick Saban. And they were very careful not to ask them any questions. Normally that question was like, well, based on what you learned at Alabama, blah, 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 blah. He's been at Georgia now long enough that we don't ask those questions anymore because it's almost considered disrespectful. He's his own man now, right? he was asked the question, you know, does this tear your team apart? Do you went into this thinking that you were the greatest, blah, 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 blah. He's like, no. And like any coach and coach speak, he said, this should galvanize my football team.
Yeah.
And he said, really, I didn't say a whole lot after the game. I let the leaders in the team, they were hurt. They were. It was painstaking. And they said, hey, listen, this is our opportunity now to prove to the world that we have bad games too.
Yeah.
And Alabama just got hot at the right time.
I mean, it's devastating, but again, human mind. No matter what you say and no matter what, it's interesting. I've worked with enough college athletes that they'll tell you one thing. They'll always say, you know, we just got to get out there and play our game. What the coach says, we just got to get out there and play our game.
Yep.
We just got to. But particularly with Georgia players, I mean, yes, you would have liked to be 2-0 against Alabama.
Yep.
But, you know, it's the human mind. You're going, okay. We beat them once. We lost once.
Yeah, the thing that holds true in life. Period. Not to get too philosophical.
Oh, here you go. We used life.
Is you do learn from your failures. For example, this business we have here. You know, Tony Curry Radio. We've been doing it for two and a half, 3 years. There's been constant failures over, not because we want to fail or not because we're not prepared. We just kept different things coming at us, and you continually learn through those failures. And Kirby said it. He said, you know, you've got to take your worst moments and learn from those. If you don't learn from those, you're never going to get better. If you're no one's been undefeated forever.
Right.
Talking about Joe Louis, who was 15-0 as a pro, or Floyd Mayweather, and even on their worst days, they end up winning. Sometimes it's good to lose. And, you know, we always talk about streaks. You know, I think about the New England Patriots that were trying to go for that perfect season. They lost one game. It was the Super Bowl. How in the hell can you have an undefeated season? You're going to set records. You're going to win a Super Bowl, and you lose your last game of the year. How is that possible? That just goes to show that on any given Sunday. And so to hear him say, listen, we've got to learn from this. And we got to learn where we made our mistakes. And they did make a lot of uncharacteristic mistakes. I don't see them doing that again against Michigan. That defense, it was crazy because I think their average was 6.9 points per game, and it went up. I listed, I think there was 9 football teams, Auburn, Vandy, UAB, College of Charleston, Florida. There were 3 other teams. Those teams combined didn't score as many points as Alabama did against Georgia on Saturday, which is like stupid crazy. Yeah. That's how good that defense is.
Well,
so,
called to Charleston.
Well, that was the only team that was, you know, considered an FCS squad. But, I mean, when you threw in Florida, you threw in Auburn, UAB to an extent, they scored 7 points. South Carolina scored 13 against them. But to put up those kind of points as quickly and as bunches as Alabama did was really amazing. So, but – you know, turnovers to me, I hate turnovers.
Well, everybody,
they're great if you get them. But turnovers, man, when you're giving a possession, and particularly a pick six or a scoop and score, man, my Bengals yesterday were down 24-0. and I'm sitting there watching. They come back 24-22. They have the ball on the 30, and next thing you know, they fumble the ball. It's a scoop and score. Next thing you know, the game's out of control. I hate turnovers
because it just ruins it.
Yeah.
Well, and it's football, really football, soccer. I was just thinking of sports where a turnover or a pick six is again, basketball doesn't make a difference.
Yeah.
An error in baseball, not really.
Yeah.
But particularly football and soccer, it literally can change the entire game.
It's not a turnovers. Are they turnover prone? I love the word prone. Are you prone to turn the football? And whenever you see a team, and this goes for college, anything, and their turnover ratio is near the top, they're winning games because we can do that. We showed you the math. If you're plus one, plus two, plus three, you got a 78, 79, 83% chance of winning a football game. And I get that. It makes sense because you're taking a possession away, particularly if you scoop or score, you have a pick six. But does that mean your football team is better than the other team because some guy couldn't hold on to the football? Now, if you're in there punching and you're a football team that is known, you know, a great, you know, corners, great pick six guys. I get that. I know it's part of the game, and it's great. It's great if you're plus two or plus three in a football game because more than likely you're going to win. But, I mean, on an even Saturday again, if Georgia's playing Alabama, they're probably going to be a 3 or 4 point favorite again. And it's because they turn the football over. And so when you see a team with 3 or 4 turnovers, I always kind of put that in the back of my mind going, okay, listen, they lost by 17, 14, whatever it was. But they did turn the football over a lot, and I don't see them doing that again against Michigan this next week. I don't know what their turnover ratio is. I remember one year watching the Cincinnati Bengals, and they were sweeping the AFC. They were doing fantastic is because their turnover ratio was great, and then they get in the playoffs. They turned the ball over 3 times. They lost. Okay, yeah. There you go. So but congratulations to the Alabama Crimson Tide. It's fun. I don't know what Crimson Tide fans would be doing during the holidays if they couldn't hang their hat on, you know, watching Bama in the Cotton Bowl and getting ready for the next big thing. But it's going to be exciting. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's like Tom Brady, man. There ain't no reason to bet against Nick Saban right now. There's no reason. I don't really see where it's going to end at this point. I don't. I mean, even towards, and it's not the end of his career because I think he's got a ways to go. And there's, again, it's not trending down at all.
No.
But, I mean, you look at the last two ball games, you're like, they played their best game of the year when they had to, and they got really 97-yard. I mean, what they had to do against the Auburn Tigers was kind of like, okay, have they just blown their wad here? Have they just spent themselves to win this football game? And the fact that he could take that to another level. And basically, hey, listen, you just won the biggest game of the year. And they got Cincinnati, who is a great football team. They're undefeated. They're favored by 14.5. I don't think you have to play a perfect game against Cincinnati to win that football game. And so I'm not throwing out rat poison here. It's not a breather, but I'd much rather play Cincinnati than Michigan or Georgia in the first round of the playoffs. So I'm kind of like, okay, you can make a mistake or two. You're not going to say that to your football team. They don't have to play flawlessly to beat Cincinnati. And then, of course, they get right back up for a national championship game, which may be more than likely a rematch against the Georgia Bulldogs, which I see.
Do you think, I mean, every great team, in particularly in college, it runs its course. I mean, there is a course, and then there is a dip. You think about the great UCLA teams, et cetera. And then at some point they went from great to not so great.
Yeah.
But I keep thinking about, and I'm fascinated by this, Nick Saban and his proteges, right? Mm-hmm. All the people that have come out, all the coaches who've come from his camp to turn into successful head coaches.
Yep.
So I was thinking about this. He's not going to coach forever. Is there a dip, a significant dip, when he retires? Because when I say significant, not that they trail off to nothing, but the same way that he's got players locked and loaded and he's recruiting, you got to believe, if I'm 70 years old, I know, you know, this is succession planning in corporations. Yeah. I know I'm not going to be coaching for 15 more years.
Yeah.
Am I already planning, said or unsaid, to sort of mold whoever it is that may come up after me? This is how corporations work. right? Yep. You got the CEO and you got two choices. You got people sort of underneath who are being groomed. You know, they know there's a succession plan. And one out of two things happen. They either bring somebody up or they bring in a wild card from the outside.
Yep.
What do you think happens when Nick Saban retires? Do you think that they that he's been grooming somebody that will sort of rise up, or will it be a void and, you know,
no, I think
Kirby
Smart
comes back to.
I don't think they'll do a coach in waiting. I don't think it'll be anybody inside the organization. Now there's three other NFL coaches, Marone and Bill O'Brien. There are guys that could take over the team immediately, and they have the resume to do so. Bill O'Brien would be one of those guys.
Right.
Doug Marone, maybe.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
But I don't see this because I don't think those guys are going to be there in 3 or 4 years.
Okay.
Does
one of the other play? One of the other.
And I don't know. It's a great question.
Like, does Dabo come?
Oklahoma, for example, which is a top 10 coaching job, just hired Brent Venables, which is one of those guys. His name has come up for coaching searches for like the last 6 or 7 years with Clemson. I think Clemson is in some trouble, and I mean this. It may be short term. You know, we talk about how Alabama reloads every year.
Yes, right.
That's the one thing that Ed Orgeron got hammered for. You know, the year after he wins a national championship, he's 5-5. You're like, you shouldn't. With a recruit you got coming off a national championship, you shouldn't lose 5 games.
Right.
Don't give this way a bad year. No, we don't. I don't care if it's a COVID year. I don't care. Alabama didn't mean anything to Alabama.
Right.
They got it done in the COVID year. So you don't lose more than 2 games in a year. You may have a game where you just didn't play well. Right. Maybe 1 year a team just laid your ass down. Yeah. I get that. But you can't lose more than 2 games a year and be considered a great football program at this point. Case in point, Bama's lost 1 game this year, 0 last year, 2 the year before, which is like, whoa.
Right.
1-1-1-1, 2-2-1-1. I mean, that's since 2011. He's lost 4, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 12. He's lost 13 games in the last 10 years. That's crazy.
Yes.
I mean, and that's why I said before, we're seeing something I don't think you'll ever see over a decade period plus ever again in college football.
That's what I think is so interesting. I mean, this is not taking anything away from the coach, but particularly in football, it's such a large entity, right? It's an organization. It's a corporation.
Yeah.
Different than any other sport, right? So as a result, there's more people. It's Nick Saban was talking about. He's talking about the offensive line coaches, the defensive line coaches. So the question becomes, when he leaves, is the company intact enough so that it doesn't fall off? We talk about it with the players.
Yeah.
Like, I want to believe that. I want to believe that Nick Saban created an organization that should be able to stand on its own, mostly.
A lot will probably have to do with his athletic director.
Without Nick Saban.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
Yeah. And I can't help but think that they're preparing for that at some point. I mean, I think we're probably good for another 3 or 4 years, maybe 5 years.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
As long as he's successful. And I think he goes out the way he wants to go out. I don't see Nick Saban losing. I say 3 games.
Well, maybe three
games.
Maybe three.
Unless it's a ball game. But Nick Saban's not going to have a 6-4 season or a 7-4 season and hang it up. It's not going to happen that way. So, but it's a great point. I don't know who they would bring in. It's by far the greatest coaching. They give you all the resources. They give everything you want. I don't know if it's going to be a big splash kind of guy or a young up-and-coming kind of guy.
You don't think it'll be someone?
But I'll tell you this. You don't ever want to follow the legend, right? You don't ever want to follow. Do you want to be the next guy? Who took over for John Wooden? You don't want to be that next guy.
Marto?
Yeah. Was it?
I don't know.
You don't ever want to be that next guy. You want to be the guy after that. Mm-hmm. And it's not to say you can't be successful at some point. It depends on how that last guy went out.
But see, I think basketball's different.
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll see. I think basketball's different. I think, again, if you think about basketball, or particularly basketball, you got less options. It's like running a company of 10 people with, you know, 3 coaches versus a company with 20,000 people with 17 different divisions.
Yeah.
You feel like they should be able to stabilize regardless of who comes in.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not regardless. They should be able to recruit in whoever they want and or bring up.
Okay. Happy birthday to Andrew Cuomo. today.
Jeez, that Cuomo family. That's going to be interesting Christmas for
I never liked his brother. I just thought he was a blowhard. I didn't watch him enough to really make, I just, every time I saw him, I was kind of like, shut up. I mean, just, and that's, you know, that was a Fox thing. I know Fox gets after it, and I went through my Fox. We all go through our Fox phase where it's exciting, and it's, and then it's kind of like, okay, it's just blowhard. It's like enough. And I get people why they like Fox, and it's conservative. I get that. But I'm kind of like, I watched Fox for about 3 years. I got into it, and then I was like, okay, I've had enough of the screaming and yelling. I can't do it anymore. Maybe it's because I was getting older. But the whole thing with his brother, and some people actually think that Chris is his son. It's they're brothers.
It is interesting because they
look like a father son.
How many years apart? They're a lot.
They are. Well, they look a lot.
They look exactly alike, and he does look like the dad.
Yeah. And their brothers, Andrew turned 64 today, which is a little younger than I actually thought.
Andrew's 64. Yeah, so I mean.
Yeah, it was funny because I could see the Fox people saying, you know, while the story's hot about your brother, can you get him on?
Right.
Can you make it happen? And he's like, sure. And, of course, whenever you watch those two on.
Wait, the Fox or CNN people?
Well, the Fox people and the CNN people,
yeah.
But asking Andrew to put them on CNN, whenever you saw them on, it was jovial. They were brothers.
Yes.
And they were talking about they wanted to show the transparency, the vulnerability, and the likability of both the guys. It was great. And that's ultimately what got his ass in trouble because
it's an interesting, I mean, we won't go into dive.
That's one of those things, real quick. That's one of those things where it's called journalistic integrity.
Yes. Yes.
And it's really hard to separate journalistic or work integrity when you're doing it with a family member who's in trouble.
Well, and they said he came out the first time he got in trouble or whatever, he said, I don't remember the quote, but he's like, family first.
Yeah.
Right? Family first. What I think is interesting about it, please, to our listeners, just go with me on this. Don't get all partisan on this. We've seen anchors, all kinds of anchors, get in trouble, be fired. For either things they did, usually sexual harassment, or things they've said, mm-hmm. right? I was trying to think. This is spicy in a different way.
Yeah.
This has got that. It's almost got like a mafia sort of feel. I mean, mm-hmm. Have we ever seen a news anchor get fired for helping their?
Well, ultimately, he didn't get fired for helping his brother. He got help for a past transgression that happened at ABC. Now, that may have been the straw that broke the camel.
That's true.
Because they suspended him.
Yes, right.
And then someone found something out listen, guys, we're going to be super, it's going to be really easy here. If you touch somebody inappropriately, it's going to come back to bite you in the ass if you ever get to a high-ranking position, whether it's an anchor, president, whatever. Yeah. Again, if they were looking for a reason, they did the same thing to Chris as Chris was trying to do to help his brother.
Yeah, that's
he was
true.
Digging. He was digging on people to try to find out things about these women who were saying these nasty things about his brother. They went out and said, "Okay, we're pulling. Look in the mirror, find something on Chris so we can fire his ass." And someone said, "I got it. He inappropriately touched a woman at some function for ABC, and it was after he left there." So people, he wasn't even working with this woman at the time, but he did inappropriately touch her. He apologized for it. I don't know how long ago it was. They were like, okay, snip, you're done. Because if you throw in sexual harassment right now is the death of anybody at this point in time. If you do something stupid, and I don't know how he inappropriately touched her.
It doesn't matter. I mean, because he could have inappropriately said something. Yeah. I got an interesting thing I'm going to throw out to you. And I'm not going to tell you who said it, but you'll know who said it. I heard I was talking to somebody yesterday, and they said that men have been accustomed to and indulged in being able to essentially say what they want, feel what they want, and express that in the world with far less consequences. So, for example, I'm not even talking to sexual. So, for example, a man in a company drops an F-bomb.
Yep.
He, you know, and it, in front of the team. Well, he's passionate and he's motivating his team. Woman, and he's upset. Whatever he's upset, you know, GD, we got a effing whatever. And they think, oh, you know, oh my God, he's motivated. And this person was talking to said, you know, if a woman did that, they'd be like, oh my God, she's gone off the deep end. Yeah. Or she's erratic. She's emotionally erratic. And this person I was talking to said, think about it. On a day-to-day basis, from boys to men, from boys to men, men have all of these outlets where they get to or are allowed to express emotions without regulating them. Football, the sports. I mean, yes, women play sports, mm-hmm. but then go beyond that. And then what this person was saying is women have to regulate what they say and do in a far more calculated way every single day. And I believe that. And the thing I was thinking about is because of that, we as men tend to do more stupid shit.
Well, is that regulatory or is it just the fact that women don't do it?
No, this person I was talking to.
Because I don't know a lot of women that drop F-bombs like guys do.
No, but they don't. And this is what she was saying. She was saying,
even if they're pissed off.
No, but exactly. So what she was saying was, we get pissed off. We want to drop an F-bomb. We think his ass is cute, but we, or it's nice, we are taught by society that, you know, we have to be much more thoughtful about what we say opposite how we feel.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about that, and her whole point was, besides the difference, her whole point is, this is why men are not good at it. Men are not good at this.
Yeah.
We think things, and we are less talented or less skilled at being able to pull it back before it comes out, in part because when it comes out, there's less, you know, less bad things happen.
It makes sense.
I thought it was really interesting. It goes back to the same thing I said.
No, it makes sense.
It's the same thing as men are not told to hold their stomach in.
Yeah.
Women have to hold their stomach in all the time, every single day.
When guys get together.
Yes.
To watch a football game. Yeah. The Buffalo Wild Wings or some dude's basement. There's F-bombs being dropped.
Yeah.
There's all kinds of stuff. When women get together.
Yeah, not as much. Not as much.
They may have a pillow fight. They may drop off the B word a couple little bit, talk about it some other women, but it ain't nearly as nasty as it is when dudes get together.
Right. Well, and then again, look at the workplace. Workplace is a great example of not the sexual harassment part at all, but just like we're allowed to express a wider range. We can be,
we may not be allowed, but
No, we're allowed in that the consequence, we don't get in trouble as much.
Yeah.
So, without mentioning names, I bet you know who I'm talking about.
I think I do.
I thought it was really interesting because I never thought about it that way. But her point was also.
But does that make women better leaders?
Well, this was. This
because sometimes, Nick Saban. He's dropped the S word 3 or 4 times in Hey Coach.
Yeah.
In a public place, and he gets pissed off, and the fans love it.
Yes.
He said shit. Oh, it's great.
Yes.
And he's got, because that for a minute, he's a little maniacal. He's lost his brain.
Right.
He said something he wasn't supposed to say, and you're like, yeah! Yes.
Well, and that's the whole point. And if a woman did it, we would say, we would go like this. We'd go, oh.
It depends on whether it's part of her character or not. Has she only done it once?
This is the whole point of this.
Because we see Nick Saban dropping F-bombs up and down the sidelines, and it's okay.
Because for two reasons. One, it's okay because it's okay.
Yeah.
And so this woman's point was, we can't do it because it is seen, and we've seen it, the woman who, she looks, they call her bitchy, they call her too aggressive. So what she said was, most of our lives, professionally, but even as girls, girls don't say that.
Yeah.
So what she said is, most of our lives, we are having to actively think about, do I say this here? I'm feeling this, do I put it in there? And she's like, and guys, particularly everything from when they're boys fighting with each other to sports, all the way up, they do all this and it's generally okay. And so her point was, it's almost like guys just haven't learned how to do that as well. And we do it in relationships all the time. Guys will drop in a relationship fight. Who's the first one to sort of say something kind of inappropriate for your, you love this person. Mm-hmm. Who's the first person to say F you?
Yeah.
Who's the first person to say, this is, you're acting like a bitch,
yeah.
right? It's a guy.
Yeah. It's not only it's not even if they drop F bombs.
No.
It's whenever a woman, I'm thinking about Madonna at the Women's March. Mm-hmm, I'm thinking of AOC. I'm thinking about women who get out there.
AOC's a good example.
Sarah Palin.
Yeah.
When you have a really strong, independent woman who doesn't cuss but is really staunch in her belief.
What do we
do? It scares the hell out of us because we're not used to seeing it. And we're kind of like.
That's exactly. Isn't that interesting?
And guys see that from their wives.
Yes. Right. And a wife will tell you, I spend most of my time I spend more time regulating what I feel opposite what I say to you.
So are we better off as men that we don't regulate it? Because no, I would make an argument that what we always talk about in therapy, sometimes we have to let it go.
Yeah, but it's our ability to know where and when.
Yeah.
That's the difference. So what her point was, and I can't figure out if it was compassion or snarky, was that y'all are not good at this. Yep. Like it's not suppressing the emotion. It's not putting it away. It's knowing how to turn some strong emotion or whatever you feel, knowing how to decide, is it appropriate to put it out now or not?
Yep.
And what she was saying is, you guys don't have to. We do.
Well, it's part of our DNA too, right? I mean, if you look at a number of people that are in anger management, it's about 95% men and 5% women. Why is that?
But I don't think that it's yes,
it's
I agree.
It's flying
with you.
Off the coop. I mean, it's flying off.
Yeah, but we can't use it as an excuse because lot in our DNA, men and women. I mean, you're right. But that would argue that we should be spending even more effort.
Yeah. Although the men I know in my life, and we just had the Mike's Life Foundation thing happen a couple weeks ago. The men that speak less, that carry the big stick, are the ones that we have the most revered respect for.
They're regulated.
Yeah.
John Wooden, I'm sorry. I know I say it all the time. John Wooden, I don't think he ever dropped a cuss word.
Yeah.
He got angry.
Yeah.
But he never dropped a cuss word.
Speaking of a guy I don't think ever dropped a cuss word, you know who Kenneth Copeland is? He's got the Believer's Voice of Victory Church.
Yes.
His birthday's today. He's 85. I watch, sometimes I'll tool around. I'm not a guy that watches these shows. I watch a Joel Osteen once in a while just because sometimes he gives me a motivational kind of thing. But the smile, he's starting to wear me out a little bit. But he's good. But he's got a good message, and he does the same message over and over and over and over and over again. And I know a lot of people are motivated by that, and sometimes it motivates me. But I was at my father-in-law's house, 10-12 years ago, and it was like 2 o'clock in the morning. I could not sleep. He lives right next to a highway. And I remember going into the garage where he had his TV, and he turned his garage into like a man cave or something. And I turned the TV on. There's Kenneth Copeland. And he was like, can you not sleep? Are you having a difficult time sleeping? And he was talking to me. I was like,
yes.
And I watched him for like 45 minutes. And I was like, I could not believe I was watching this TV evangelist talk for 45 minutes. And I actually got something. And I remember it. So it must have changed something in my life. And from that point on, I started watching a little bit. And then I realized he was just an old coot. And he just kind of lost his brain.
Well, he also knew he was on at 2 o'clock in the morning. Yeah. Playing to the camera.
Yeah. Well, he's incredibly successful.
Absolutely.
And he's one of those, if it's in the Bible, so be it. He's incredibly conservative that way. He turns 85 today. Randy Rhoads of Black Sabbath. And of course, when Randy passed away, Ozzy Osbourne he's like, I'm done. I can't do this anymore.
Randy, have been like 70 something?
He's 65. Johnny Manziel.
Oh.
It's kind of hard to believe because I thought for sure he'd be older. He's 29 today.
Jeez.
Giannis Antetokounmpo turns 27 today. And
Antetokounmpo's only 27?
Yeah. Jeez. And Andrew Cuomo again, 64. Today is also Miner's Day.
Okay.
You know anybody that's a miner?
I know. I'm from the West Coast.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe someone's grandpappy was a gold miner.
Yeah.
On my side, but actually not my side, no.
I think mining is one of those. I just think it's incredible.
Like mining, like for coal or like gold mining?
Mining for anything.
What was the difference? Like gold rush kind of
mining. Well, gold rush thing, I mean, well, you can make an argument they had to do that because most miners had to do it to provide for their families.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was just like the nastiest.
Yes.
The Steelworkers Union was the one that got the whole thing, and the miners got the whole union thing going. And
yes.
Certainly, but to be underground.
Dangerous.
And, oh,
I mean,
my gosh.
Horrible. Yeah.
You watch any of these history channels.
Oh, like I know.
The 1800s and early 1900s.
They all died. They all sick. They all, yeah.
I mean, you go to work every day, you kiss him on the cheek, and you don't know if he's coming back. And then the Chilean miners that got yes. stuck underground and stuff ugh. Like that. Today's miners. And today's also National Pawnbroker's Day, which I may celebrate.
What is it? Pawn, what's the show?
All Stars?
Yeah, I love that.
Show's a great show.
I love the, who's the guy, not?
Chumlee?
Not him, the other guy, the bald guy, who's really like kind of the knowledgeable.
Yeah, Rick.
Yeah, I like
Rick
him.
Harris.
I feel like if I had to pawn something, I'd trust him, that he would give me a good opinion.
Yeah.
Like Chumlee. Oh.
It's an amazing thing about that show is when I remember when it first came on the air, I was like, I can't believe they're doing a show about a pawn store.
Yeah.
And it was in Las Vegas, so I was like, I watched. They've done a great job. Again, they're like a football team. They've gone out and gotten specialists and experts.
Yes.
Whether it's rock and roll,
oh, I love
jewelry,
when they get their experts.
Money,
yes.
The Bearded Wonder. They get all these guys that come in and tell their stories, and then it turns into be like something that it's almost like Antiques Roadshow. They don't just sit there and say that's worth $8.50. They tell you the whole story about it, so you feel like you're learning something. And then you're being entertained at the same time.
$8.50.
I went through my Antiques Roadshow thing. Like
you
I
watched Mecum Auto.
Meet the Motto.
Mecum no. Auto Auctions.
No, I haven't.
You got to get that. Like you have to just stumble upon it.
Yeah.
And you'll be completely mesmerized.
Well, a lot of it too is like I think that we think that when we see something, we're going to sponge everything we see.
Right.
And like I have to see something 3 or 4 times before it sinks in. So I could sit there and watch an entire show on Pawn Stars about guns.
Right.
And think that I know everything about long rifles and Colt 45s, but I don't remember any of that crap.
A belated birthday to our friend Maddox Mullinax, who turned 25.
Wow, really?
Young, so that's what I was going to say. Young Maddox, who is now full on the racing circuit.
Yep.
Mullinax Racing is, Chris has created an amazing operation. They're not one of our sponsors, I was just saying, but I happen to see on social media, young, little Maddox.
How about that?
He was a little boy when we
still wants to go to the moon.
Yeah, but yep. now he looks like a NASCAR racer.
Yeah, he's an adult.
We may. Wouldn't that be hysterical?
Tony Curry radio on the hood of his car.
TKR.
Uh huh.
Call Chris. Chris is busy. He's on.
Yeah,
the
Chris
way.
Is in movies and stuff. He's doing another movie with Morgan Freeman and Kevin Costner. He ain't got time for us. We've tried to get him on a couple times.
That is just, I'm going to go, that, what they used to say that you get discovered in the back in the 40s and 50s in the soda shop?
Yeah.
Right? And, the woman who got discovered who's sitting at the end of the bar?
Yeah.
The Chris Mullinax story is without a doubt.
Chris Mullinax owns CRM Motors, which was
locally.
A sponsor of ours and also when I was on Jocks. And I was driving one of their vehicles. And,
They also race. He's raced for a long time.
And they do all kinds of upgrades, truck upgrades and stuff like that. And just a good Southern guy. And I've had many meetings with him and talked to him. And he's working the shop and he's underneath the car. And I remember the last time I needed a trailer hitch for the Odyssey. And he's like, come on over. And I met with him and this and the other. And John Travolta does a movie.
Yeah.
Shania Twain. It was a movie that wasn't released broadly, but it was a movie about racing. And somehow they hooked up with Chris because Chris was into racing and they wanted him to show them some.
What do they call it? Like a technical, on-set
technical
consultant.
Advisor. Yeah. And next thing you know, Chris and John become good friends. And John's flying him out to the ranch on his.
Well, they gave him a part. They put him in the car.
Yeah.
And then I think they put him in the car and they gave him like some super minor speaking part.
Yeah.
Now, Chris. Has never acting class.
Chris is as Southern as it gets.
No acting.
Great guy.
Good looking guy.
Good looking dude.
Yeah.
He looks like a race car guy. He's perfect for the role. And next thing you know, the guy's been in like 6 movies. He moved out to LA, started his own studio. And I'm like, it's crazy.
What? Sorry. I'm sorry.
And even he's like, I don't know what's going on.
You think about all the actors trying to make it, and they go to acting classes, and they have theater backgrounds, and they think.
And it couldn't happen to a better guy. I mean, it couldn't happen to but it's just one of those life ain't fair. It's like, sometimes it doesn't matter how hard you work at something. It just ain't for you. God's got a different plan for you. But in this particular case.
Have you seen his headshots lately?
Oh, yeah. Now he's got speaking roles. He's in movies with Morgan Freeman. He's, I mean, it's like, yeah, it's the craziest thing, isn't it?
I love it.
And it's difficult. There's so many reality shows now. Right. You meet anybody and they've been on something, whether it's AFT or whatever.
Not him. He went from nothing.
He went from here to
major movies. Okay.
Yeah. And he had a successful business, and as far as I know.
They're about to take out an 8 point, just so you know.
There you
go. Keep
going.
And
his son Maddox,
who was also in the movie.
Yeah.
The first one.
Worked with us for a couple of years and doing our videography and did a fantastic job. And maybe it's time to reach back out to those guys. It's our Kevin Bacon, our 6 degrees there. Tony Curry Radio, download the Tony Curry Radio app. It was interesting. I came down here yesterday. Sundays are our biggest day of the week.
Mm-hmm.
Which is really interesting because, you know, we do special programming, Dark Side of the Pooch, later on tonight at 8 o'clock with Dr. Reb Stewart. We do Adaptogen with Dr. Alex Hublin and Dr. Josh Klapo on Tuesday nights at 8 o'clock. Wednesday nights are Live Wire Wednesday, brought to you by Southern Precision Staffing for all of your staffing needs. 205-682-2828. Kai Gregory and the crew, fantastic, and they've been super busy with a staffing business. They're great. They're right here in Hoover, Alabama, but they serve the United States of America just like Tony Curry Radio does in the Tony Curry Radio app. They're fantastic. 205-682-2828. Austin Hanks, I was his guest last Thursday. I believe he's got Rick Nielsen from Cheap Trick on this Thursday. Awesome. He is killing it. The guest he's getting on his show, Matt Sorum from Guns N' Roses, Billy Gibbons from ZZ Top. Every time I turn it on, I'm like, I cannot believe this is running on my radio station exclusively. Man. It's great. And then the Damon Johnson show at 8 o'clock. But Sundays, I think people are doing things out in the yard. They just crank it up. We had huge numbers yesterday, and we want to thank everybody for listening yesterday. It's fantastic. A lot of people getting things done. Of course, we're getting some severe weather coming through here in the next couple hours, so a lot of people trying to get their work done. But greatly appreciate people listening. Check out the Tony Curry Radio app. Tony Curry Radio app. It's free. It takes you 5 seconds to download. If you don't like it, get rid of it. But you're going to love it. It's great classic rock and roll and special programs. Where you're going to change our programming up a little bit because we do replays at noon through the week. And now we're just going to do replays of that show. So Damon Johnson's going to be Damon Johnson Friday. So he's going to be on at noon and 8.
Perfect. Day.
So that way we can keep track, because I can't even remember. We got so many things going on here. I can't even remember when's running. Austin Hanks will be Austin Hanks Thursday. It's going to run at noon and 8. Live Wire Wednesday, the whole nine yards. So we'll have that going on as well. Talk about another one of our great sponsors. And then Art Basel. Do you know what that is? It was an art show.
Art Basel?
Yeah. Art Basel, Miami Beach. They had an art show this past weekend. Lenny Kravitz, I believe, was the one that put it on. Released and sold a bunch of NFTs this weekend.
Of course, Lenny's
a woman that. Sold something yesterday for the first time ever as an NFT. I want to tell you what that is coming up here in just a second. Go ahead, talk about one of our great sponsors.
You know, I wonder if I could sell my prostate as an NFT.
Yeah, you can sell anything as an NFT. Well, again, it takes money to make money. If you're already an artist, well, maybe not even here. It's like you can't just walk in off the street and say, I want to sell this sound effect of a fart for $300,000. You have to already be in the door a little bit. But what this woman is selling, pretty amazing stuff.
Okay. I can't sell an NFT of my prostate, but I can tell you about prostate cancer and invite you. But you can't. It'd have to be a picture of my prostate, right?
No, you can sell your prostate. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Vituro Health, we're going to pivot. Vituro Health is a great sponsor of ours, great partnership. They are a company that is out on the forefront of developing treatments for prostate cancer. 1 out of 9 men are going to develop prostate cancer. It's one of the most common forms of cancer. It can be deadly, but it's also very treatable. So guys, Vituro Health is asking you to do 2 things. Number one, have a blood test every year to track the antigen levels on your prostate to make sure everything's going okay. Number two, have a prostate exam. And then if you do get diagnosed, know that there are minimally invasive techniques. That means less negative sexual side effects, less of the incontinence. And go to Vituro Health's webpage so you can learn what the newest forms of treatment are. It's Vituro Health, and the webpage is VituroHealth.com.
Tony Curry Radio and the Curry and Klapo Show. You can hear us every Monday through Friday morning between 7:30 and 9:30. Again, from 6 until 8, we do a replay every single day of the week from 6 until 8. You can hear us again. I want to say good morning to Fred Jamison, Barry Morrison, David Merlin. Checking in today, Stephen Walker, Ashley Garino, Brian Less, Teresa Ponder-Witt, Steve Harsh and Janine Fox and David Cook, they've all commented on our video this morning here on Facebook Live, and we greatly appreciate you checking this morning. We're gonna set the screen up. I don't want to be one of these shows where we're sitting there talking back and forth to people because we have Tony Kerr Radio,
right?
And so we're a radio station, and so people are listening to us, and not a lot of people. A lot of people, but just a lot of people aren't listening and watching on Facebook Live, and so I don't want to be. Anyway, we appreciate everyone listening and watching wherever you are. We have podcasts, by the way, that go up every single day. So every single day. Google Curry and Claypo podcast, fresh podcast go up every single day. So if you miss any of the show, you can listen to this podcast as well. So we got those going on as well. Couldn't do without great sponsors like the Jimmy Hale Mission. Jimmy Hale Mission is one of my favorite charities. I've been doing stuff with them since I moved into town in 1988. Michael Coleman's a good friend of mine. I'm going to have lunch or dinner with him next week. He is expanding with Jimmy Hale Mission, man, from that little place they used to have downtown to what they've got going on now. It's just an amazing thing. Jesse's Place and more. $5 a week, and I know a lot of people want to write things off, and I know a lot of people are asking for help right now in charity. But if you can, give back to the Jimmy Hale Mission because it helps us right here in the Birmingham area. They're going to help you vocationally, mentally, physically, spiritually, and more. They do wonderful work. You can go to TonyCurryRadio.net, TonyCurryRadio.net. There's a donation button, or go to JimmyHaleMission.org, JimmyHaleMission.org, and please give. It's a very worthy institution. Their testimony is fantastic. Great mission. It's the Jimmy Hale Mission. Also want to say a big hello to Chris Creek at the club at Lakeview. Heard from him last week. He's doing well. They're getting ready for the winter months. The golf course yesterday was 75 degrees. Yeah. Golf, swim, eat, repeat, man. It's the great thing about it. I had to turn the AC on yesterday.
We got.
I was like, God, I thought I was done.
I was like, please.
It was 74 degrees. Yeah. I was like, this is ridiculous. And my daughter was like, it's hot in here. I was like, you know what?
I was schwitzing.
Yeah, it was, yeah, I know, right? I couldn't. I said, December 5th, Birmingham, Alabama, turn the AC on. That's pretty cool. So, and it's still kind of warm out there. The AC's pumping right now.
Nice,
but
man.
You know, if you don't like the weather, wait 5 minutes, it'll change. That's right. He had everything going out there. The golf's lounge was killer. They got great food. They do bands. They do charity events out there as well. Golf, swim, you repeat. The pool, of course, is closed for just a little while, but you don't have to wait like a lot of memberships. You have to wait till Labor Day or Memorial Day or whatever. When it gets warm enough, they're going to open that bad boy up. It's fantastic. And for as low, excuse me, as $100 a month, you can become a member at a private club. It's out in McCall. It's out in God's country. It's about 20 minutes from downtown Birmingham. It is beautiful. It's the club at Lakeview, theclubatlakeview.com, theclubatlakeview.com, or the club at Lakeview, their Facebook page. Check them out. Chris Creek, good friend of mine. He does a fantastic job. All right, so I'm still trying to figure out what these NFTs are. between NFTs and Bitcoin, it's called, am I missing out on something? You know, even if I had the money to invest at this point in time, am I missing out something? An NFT stands for non-fungible token, right?
Yes.
It's a type of digital art form created and verified as a unique artwork with blockchain authentication and bought and sold using cryptocurrency. So it's not only a piece of virtual art, but it's also paid with cryptocurrency. So if you're not into Bitcoin, you're probably not into NFTs. But if you're into Bitcoin, you might be interested in NFTs. And if you're in NFTs, you're definitely into cryptocurrency because you have to be. Because that's the only way they pay.
You.
Right?
That's that. You sounded so.
So if you're going to jump in, you jump all the way in. So if you're not into crypto, you don't care about NFTs. But if you're into NFTs, then you better be into crypto.
Does it make you feel just slightly old? Just
no, and I don't think cryptocurrency is going away.
No, it's trading.
As I get older in my life, I don't consider myself more cynical. I consider myself smarter, and so I can be a little bit more opinionated about the crap that screwed me over in the past. I'm a cash guy, despite the fact that no one will take a 50 or 100 anymore.
Do you keep it underneath your mattress?
If I have any, yes. And so I'm kind of like, and so a woman yesterday, as part of the Art Basel Miami Beach, which was run, I believe, by Lenny Kravitz.
Spell Basel for me. Is it?
B-A-S-E-L.
Okay, Basel.
Is it Art Basel?
I don't know.
It could, for sake of art, Art Basel.
Yeah, it just sounds better.
It has been awash with intense discussion and unveilings of new NFTs. And now one artist is controversially selling her eggs as a non-fungible token.
Okay, so this is where I get... Okay, go on, because this is the... I understand pictures and things, pictures, and then turning those into...
So let's try to dumb this down between two guys that don't have a flipping clue what we're talking about. So a non-fungible token is you own the original art of whatever it is. It can be a recording. It could be a song.
Right.
It could be a picture of art. It could be anything. And it's because
it's code.
Yeah, it's code. It's zeros and ones.
So okay.
And because of blockchain and the authentication that goes with it, there's no way that anyone can touch it. That's blockchain is a big part of what cryptocurrency is about.
Yep.
It's out there. If you lose your password, good luck, you're done. Because you're never getting it back. There's some person out there that's got $1 billion in cryptocurrency and can't get it because they can't remember their flipping passcode because they were given to them like 10 years ago. Remember that story? And it's like, there's no recover your password code here.
Wait, can I?
We're
going to
do a two.
Service?
Yeah,
no,
we're going to do a two-digit authentication. No, this ain't Facebook. This ain't the bank. If you lose your password, you're done. And it's gone. Because that's the whole idea. Is it's virtual. It's like trying to grab gnats. It's good luck. It ain't gonna happen, right? So that's what makes it so verifiable and safe, if you will, because it goes through blockchain. So am I right so far?
Sure.
So despite the fact that like you could do an NFT of the Mona Lisa.
Right.
You don't own the painting.
You own the code, the digitization, the digital code associated or that comes from that original painting.
Exactly.
So this is where I'm getting a hard time
with
AIDS. So
you can own the NFT for the Mona Lisa, but you don't actually own the Mona Lisa itself.
No.
You own what do you own? And we're not selling things like the Mona Lisa's because it's already worth $1 billion.
No,
so
we're
you
selling the digital code.
Yeah, the digital code.
If you will. So the way I think about it is if you took a picture of the Mona Lisa, if you digitize the Mona Lisa.
Yeah.
So when you digitize it, you're turning it into numbers.
Yes.
Right? Because that's the digitization.
Yes.
And then those numbers are unique to the Mona Lisa, that string of numbers that represents that picture, and that's what becomes an NFT. So technically, the code in your NFT would translate back into a picture of.
There you go.
Okay. So
where the value and the investment comes into place, and again, you're not buying. For the most part, I believe people are buying these things not. Well, they're wanting to say they own the original code to it, but it's also an investment because people are dropping $200,000 for recordings of men passing.
And they're only releasing. What's really interesting is depending on what it is, they may release one NFT.
It's like a lithograph.
Yeah, that's exactly. So they may do one, and for lesser money, they may do. Now, here's the other thing they do. There is a code that is the original. And that's a specific code. Then they may do essentially a more limited or less limited, essentially copy codes.
Yeah.
That are, well, it's lithograph. It number one is the most.
Yeah.
And then we're going to do 10 more. But if your digits end in 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, it's worth less. But keep going because this is where I have a hard time. I get that with pictures or things that you digitize. This is where I'm going to sound stupid. I don't understand how you do with eggs.
Armenian artist Nareen Arkalian, 42, says her NFT, her first NFT, will be a painting entitled Live.
Okay, so it's a painting.
Which will include an embedded contract in the code promising one of her eggs to the buyer.
Stop. Let me soak that in. Okay. So she's going to make something. They're going to paint.
She's going to do a painting.
Of something?
Yes, it's going to be called Live.
Okay, so it's not necessarily of her eggs.
No.
Oh, now this gets really spicy.
And then embedded in the code will be a contract.
Eggs. Yes.
That you get one of her eggs.
So that would be like Tony, here's what it'd be. Like you painting a picture, and then embedded in the code would be you get free dinner with Tony. You get dinner with Tony Curry.
Yeah. And again, these things are only worth what you're willing to spend on them.
Well, yeah, it, right. Yeah, absolutely. Right. So if you could do one too,
yeah.
Well, people would buy yours.
She says she fully expects the person who buys the NFT to receive or conceive a child from her egg, adding that she hopes it will be bought by a couple who are having trouble conceiving. Oh. I am so happy to bring a child into the world through my artwork.
Well, not really. Like, that's weird.
She's the mom of a 21-year-old son. It's a beautiful act of creativity to give the gift of art and life. My artworks are of all my children. And the fact this one will actually produce a child is wonderful.
That's a mind-blowing
story. The art will also mean so much more to the buyer because it's brought their child. It will always carry that special memory.
That's pretty cool, Tony.
She also clarified that the child will be a child once they are born, not a piece of art.
Stop. Pause. These are things
you child will be a child once they're born, not a piece of art.
Right.
But you can certainly make an argument that your child is a piece of art.
No.
Yeah, because the contract that enabled you to get the egg was...
I know, but it's kind of like, can I say this? I mean, she's creative. Listen, I'm going to tell you. I think this is wonderful. But technically, she could have painted the picture and got one of her eggs extracted and offered one of her eggs up for fertilization.
Yeah.
I mean, she's just combining the two. Like, there's nothing...
Well, it makes a lot more sense for people that are a little... cynical about NFTs as well, because if they know that there are now, I don't know how she ensures that one of her eggs are going to be fertile to inseminate
in the contract.
To have a child.
It's in the contract.
It may have to be more than one egg, because if it's just one egg.
Oh, right. That's true.
Right?
Yeah.
There's going to have to be something deep in that contract saying, okay, we have
now
to.
Now here's interesting.
Because what if you buy the art and then you don't conceive a child with her egg? Then you get another egg?
Interesting. If you have an NFT. Okay, so you have an NFT. The NFT is just a code, right? Yeah. It's numbers. The contract, it's embedded in the contract. The contract is digitized. The contract becomes the numbers. But then do you also have a printed out copy?
Like, well, you can.
No, I'm saying that's what I mean.
You could print off a copy of the contract through the NFT you buy. Yeah, sure.
Well, you have to. Otherwise, you wouldn't know what the contract said.
Exactly. And you're not going back to look at your virtual NFT.
Can you look at your virtual NFT?
Well, sure you can. I mean, that's the whole reason, because people are like, why would I want to buy an NFT of something? Because this doesn't mean you can't see it. Like,
right.
if someone buys an NFT of one of these Alabama prints.
Yes, that's exactly.
Well, the print's already out.
Right.
So you can, I mean, I could go take a picture of the Mona Lisa and you know, print it off of my printer and put it up on my, and that's okay. There's nothing illegal about that. But I don't own the original.
Right.
We got too much money to do stupid shit with, is what we got. NFTs are the hottest topic at the Art Basel, Miami Beach this week. Pieces Dubai included Tina Turner's Versace dress.
So it's not really a dress.
I get when like when artists sell music catalogs.
The music, anything that's digitized. But again,
yeah, because you're making money off every time it's being played, I understand, and it's tangible. When you're talking about, see, I don't understand buying NFTs for something that you can put your hands on.
Right.
Because that kind of flies in the whole face of what an NFT is, right? If you're buying Tina Turner's Versace dress, Wolf of Wall Street, Jordan Belfort offered works based on his life and former Donald Trump fixer Michael Cohen putting his prison badge up for sale as an NFT.
So I think...
The authentic signature of Star Trek creator Gene Roddenberry was coded into the DNA of a live bacterial organism and put on display at Art Basel. Man, I mean, I don't consider myself a smart guy.
You can't see the signature. You digitize it and you inject it into the DNA.
What this enables you to do is to sell anything and put a price on it. Anything. Because there's only one of everything. The original, right? Like that dust ball over there in the corner.
Yeah.
It's my dust ball. I own it. There's a 50 other dust balls in here, but that one is unique in that it's the first one. It's the only one. but I could replicate it a million different ways. I could make another dust ball, or I could take pictures of the dust ball. I could post the dust ball online. I could social media the dust ball. I could do whatever I want with the dust ball. But because it's my dust ball and it's an original dust ball, now all of a sudden I can digitize it.
But is digitize it?
You put code on that dust ball, next thing you know, I could sell it.
Based on its...
That's we need to get somebody on to talk about FTTs, because I think it's... I've heard people talk about... I heard some podcast where there was an NFT person. There was a person that was like, what the hell are we doing, person like me? And neither one of us really making an argument that made sense to me. I was trying to follow it. I really was. And you know, the fact that it's unique, it came across as kind of a snake oil salesman to me. It was kind of like, really? The other person's like, isn't this great that we can digitize this and we can make this code and blah, 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 blah. And the other person's like, I don't really understand. And they, you could tell they were, but they had done it and they're like, I don't, but again, I mean,
it's going,
things are only worth what.
I mean, so think about Bitcoin. Bitcoin's an interesting example, because this is where the crypto piece comes in. And to me, this is where the link is. I invest, if I want to buy cryptocurrency, I take money from my checking account, dollars.
Yeah.
And I'm using it to buy. I'm not buying crypto with crypto. You can buy crypto with crypto, but I can invest my money, because crypto has a cash value, a non-crypto value.
Yep.
So I'm going to put my, let's just call my real dollars, and I'm going to buy Bitcoin. I don't know what the trend, you know, yep. Bitcoin's going for like $40,000.
Yeah, but you can buy portions of it.
Okay, so I buy portions of it. Now
can buy Bitcoin right now. For the layman out there, yeah. I can't afford $40,000 for one Bitcoin, but you can buy it.
There's a great webpage, a great app called Robinhood.
Or Stash.
That's exactly. You can buy. Okay, so now let's think about this. This is our journey, Tony. So now we've gone from our cash, right, that we understand, and now we own a currency that we don't understand. But we know the equivalent, how much money we spent and how much money we got.
And much like paper money, the value of it changes.
That's exactly. But so now we're in crypto world, mm-hmm. and we got this amount, mm-hmm. and we're going to use it to buy this thing. And in this case, it's a code of some sort of code representing a thing. Your horn, Tina Turner.
Is there a reason why you have to use cryptocurrency to buy an NFT? Why couldn't you use
cash? Well, no,
cash?
But that's what I think is interesting.
Because that's the only thing they accept.
I know, but here's where it gets interesting. This is where it gets super interesting. Follow the journey of it. If it's, you know, I pay 10,000 Bitcoin for this NFT. And this is, again, like art or anything. People want it. People are like, oh, 10,000, I'll give you 20,000 Bitcoin. Okay, I make the transaction. I'm selling my art, right? Yep. Well, what's interesting is you can back out. So now I have 20,000 Bitcoin. I can cash it back out into my dollars.
Yeah.
Much like you would do anything else.
Yeah.
So you can either stay. My point is you can stay in cryptocurrency world, which, you know, there's all these arguments now about should stores be taking Bitcoin? Some do, some don't, all that kind of stuff. But just for those of us who are kind of old and don't understand, there's a pathway to get into it, buy it, have the value go up in this currency that you don't understand, but you see it's going up, it's worth more. And then at some point you go, oh, it's worth more. How much does that translate now into dollars? Well, I put $1,000 to get X number of Bitcoin to buy this NFT. And now that NFT I can sell for twice as much Bitcoin, which gives me this much more dollars, put dollars in my pocket.
It reminds me a little bit of the Discover card. When the Discover card came out, they were like the Fox TV. Like, people were like, what is this? Right. You know, and it's never going to take off.
Right.
And you couldn't use your Discover card. Anyway. There's a lot of places that wouldn't take Discover card. Like, a lot of places won't take Bitcoin.
Right.
But as the people buy it up,
I can pay
my mortgage with Bitcoin now.
Can you?
Yeah. We have our technical advisor, our director of programming here, was telling me to get on Bitcoin like 2 years ago. And I was like, he's a little tech savvy. He's out there. He worked at Apple. He's a tech guy. He's like, you should take everything you got. He said, you can pay your electric bill Bitcoin. You can do everything now with Bitcoin. He said, you should be paying. It doesn't mean it's going to be any cheaper or any.
It's not free. It's yeah, you have to translate your dollars into it.
Yeah, and so the whole idea of, you know, it's like going to a foreign country.
That's that's
and buying you know pesos.
That's exactly that's okay. All
and,
is.
And as long as you know what it's.
It's the yes. Don't do that. This is how you stay young.
I know. I'm just wondering if it's going to get so big that we're going to end up paying Bitcoin before I die.
End up paying what?
Using Bitcoin rather than.
Oh, we won't.
I mean, we're already there because a lot of places now don't even take cash.
No.
You go to Protective Stadium.
Ding, ding, ding.
By the way, congratulations to the Auburn Tigers. They're going to be playing Protective Stadium.
Oh, that's right.
Taking on Houston, their bowl game, which is great for the city of Birmingham and for UAB because that's their
I mean,
homies.
You don't even have to think about it. We'll go two steps further. First of all, if you see anybody writing a check at a grocery store, you're like,
oh. Yeah.
So you don't even have to now, you don't need your credit cards either. You just have a digital representation of them in your phone.
Yeah. Well, until you can tell me, and for the most part, it seems unhackable, correct?
What?
Bitcoin. Cryptocurrency is unhackable.
Supposedly, until
because
somebody
of blockchain.
Does, but yes.
Which is only a matter of time.
Yeah, somebody
before
don't.
Quantum computers come in, and that's hacked too. Listen to you. Because I've been told for a million quantum. Years that everything's safe using my debit card, and I know I've been hacked into like a million times. I'm getting alerts all day, every day about some dude in Miami going to a car wash with my debit card number. And I'm like, wait a minute.
Wait till you have your kid.
But it's safe. And so they keep telling us, don't even stick the card in the machine. Just tap it and you're done.
Right.
And I'm going, and I did that, by the way, for the first time the other day. It was kind of cool.
Did you feel good at Publix?
No, it scared the shit out of me.
Did you do it at Publix?
Yeah.
Did you? Someone have to show you
how? I did it at Protective Stadium.
Did someone have to show you how to tap it?
No, I think I dropped it on accident and it just took.
Yeah. Boom.
I was like. But with all this wonderful technology comes the fraudulent activity that comes along with it. And so I'm thinking there's only...
But people still...
You don't think that all these hackers, these ransom hackers out there aren't trying to figure out a way to get into the Bitcoin currency?
Are.
And they'll figure it out. And
listen,
so when that happens...
That's no different than...
And I can't remember a password from yesterday. I'm not going to remember my cryptocurrency password. Where do you keep that damn thing?
I don't know. I just got to...
I know what mine would be.
No, you don't want that.
No. And do you change your password to your cryptocurrency like every day to ensure that it's not hackable?
If it's a strong password, you don't want to. You have to.
Does anybody, by the way, does anybody out there use the given password that they ever get through any site?
The strong password?
Well, yeah. No one does.
The people that I work with technology do.
Well, yeah, because if you're checking something on your phone, it doesn't always translate to your laptop or your PC.
Now you sound like an old person. Nobody can because there's
because that's the pain in the ass.
No, there's programs like LastPass and other where you install it.
Is that NFTs?
Huh?
Is that virtual?
It's an app.
How many times are you on your computer and you're like, every time you go into your bank account, it's right there because it says remember me and you're on it and then you're out. And you're like, oh, I forgot.
Yeah.
And you get on your phone and it says, what's your pat? And you're like, it's at home. But it's sunk up. I'm on the cloud. So I'm on the cloud. It's sunk up with my computer. Why the hell is my phone not have the same password? Why is it remembering me here? And next thing you know, and you don't have the password because you said remember me. And it's that thing with like 17 exclamation marks with the 2 and a 7 and
that's
a Z and a 5 and your picture of your
password.
Kid's face and an emoji on there as the password. And you're like, okay. And then, God forbid, and then you have to go through...
Change your password,
and then of course Then of course you don't remember your username because your username sometimes your email sometimes is Tony Curry, so you have to go back and so then you get both of them. Then you're gonna get a 2-digit authentication, but that one's sent to your wife's phone. It goes to your wife's phone because your wife set the account up, and then you're going okay, and then you're calling your ex-wife going, hey, listen, you just got an authentication code. Oh, it was sent to me 60 seconds ago. It's already over. I haven't sent it again, and then you have to talk to a woman you don't want to talk to because you need your sixth thing of, and it's not coming to your phone. And next thing you know, you get on there, yeah. And then it gets all the way down to something stupid as shit is, what's the name of your favorite pet?
Right.
And you're like, we did this 18 years ago. I don't remember what my favorite pet was 18 years ago. And then because you didn't answer that question,
not. So I've tried. I don't know if Julie knows this. I needed to get into her account.
Yeah.
And I couldn't because this was not to take anything. I was trying to set up a phone thing, right? She was in a meeting, and they're like, do you want to text, right? text the authentication. I'm like, crap, if they do that, I'm not going to get it because she's in a damn meeting. Or would you like to answer the security question? I felt like I was on a game show.
Oh, I know.
I'll go for the security question. These are not mine. These are my wife's. And she's like, you know, the first one was, what's your favorite color? Well, I know her favorite color.
I'm like, yeah.
Yellow. Bing. I was like, all right. What city were you born in? I happen to know. She's born in Huntsville, Alabama. Yeah. Third one, who was your best, your childhood best friend name? I was like, I don't, because she's talked about it. I'm
like, yeah.
Susan. Susan, no. And then they do they get the warning, right? The warning is if you have too many attempts, they're going to lock you out.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Have you ever been there and you're on the last attempt? And you're like, oh, please, 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 please.
And then they'll lock you out. You're done.
Then you got to call customer service. Then you're on the phone for customer service. Unless customer service is closed, then you're on forever.
That's like the passcode on your phone. My daughter changed her passcode like 16 times. She couldn't remember what her passcode was.
Right.
So I took her phone down to Apple, had a meeting, and I'm like, I need to get my kid's passcode. They couldn't give it to me.
Right.
Because they'd have to wipe it clean.
Yeah, because Apple did, right.
And I'm like, it's a passcode. You can get a passcode for any, you have to be able to get the passcode. They're like, no. And I'm like, this is stupid. This is great. You're Apple, for God's sake. You can tell me what the passcode.
You're doing it for protection.
It was my daughter's phone.
Your passcode.
I was profiled. So I was like, okay. And I told her, I said, don't ever do that. So I gave her easy passcode. I said, don't change your passcode. You're 9 years old. No one's got your phone. No one's trying to break in.
Well, you don't have any cryptocurrency.
Don't answer the front door and don't answer any text messages you don't know they're coming from. Don't answer 800 phone numbers.
Just wait. Well, you got teenagers. Just wait till they're using your credit cards and debit cards electronically, right? It used to be that you had to have the number or whatever. Now they just have access.
Yeah, I had to do that yesterday.
Let's buy an NFT. Let's make an NFT. We could make an NFT of the Tony Curry first came on the air.
We could do an NFT, but I mean, again, it's
someone
only worth
it. Someone will buy it. Famous. Someone will buy it. Someone will buy it.
It's only worth, yeah, it's only
is
worth.
Is there a picture of you? Is there a picture of you standing up on the
billboard? Yeah.
You have it?
Yes.
Is it the original picture?
It is the original picture.
There you go. The original picture, Tony Curry standing on the billboard.
What's it cost to turn something into an NFT?
I don't know.
There's probably a
cost. I think you can do it yourself.
There's probably a cost associated with turning something into code, I would think.
Yeah. Well, you just got, yeah, I don't know.
I just think it's amazing what people are willing to spend. Something's only worth what willing.
That's exactly. Well, and they said that. I listened to that same podcast. They're like, it's only worth what it is. And that is why famous artists, famous celebrities, if you're already in the game and what you, things associated with you, either that you've made or you, are already wanted,
yeah.
Then it works.
So I would make the argument if you own, and I'm using the Mona Lisa just because it's the first thing that came to my mind. If you own the Mona Lisa, contractually speaking, I guess it depends on what kind of contract you sold. Because the person who painted the Mona Lisa, if they were still alive, could say, well, I'm the original art. You own the artwork and you have it, and that's what I sold it to you, but I still own the original.
So
intellect, yeah. Not even the rights to it.
No, but
you
so,
own the rights,
yes.
So I can go sell that. So for a company that just bought the Guns N' Roses collection of music for $300 million,
yes,
could you make the could you because I could sit there and say, okay, you own every right to those songs.
Yeah,
you get the money for it. You get all those things.
But
it's up here. So I want to sell
the
intellect.
It's interesting with the original artist who made. Yeah, I don't know. Now we are so far beyond. This is legal. This is crypto.
I mean, if you bought $1 million piece of art and all of a sudden someone's selling the original intellect behind that in a virtual world of ours into code, I'm like, wait a minute. I own it. Well, yeah, you own it. You got the original and you got the one and only. People can take pictures of it and do whatever they want. But I'm selling the intellectual properties to that particular painting because that's all up here. I'm going, well, wait a minute. And that's probably going for more than what the original painting was.
Yeah, because you can't carry the painting around.
At what point? See, my point is like lithographs. You know, when you buy a lithograph, you're buying one of 500 or one of 250 or whatever. You're buying that. Well, it's like stock, right?
Yeah, it's exactly.
You're buying that with the idea that there's not going to be any more produced.
Right.
And so you ask the question, are you going to be making any more lithographs? No, we destroy the original lithograph.
Right.
They say they destroy it. We're destroying the original, so it no longer can be made again, okay? So as long as it's being destroyed, there are being no, that's what raises the value of something. Right. If there's only three of them, you know, you can't make another one. Right. That's why, that's what the Treasury does with these coins. I was if you get up really early on Sunday mornings, like
2 o'clock
I do,
in the morning, you're not watching Copeland?
The coin guy's on, right? The coin guy. So I'm watching the coin guy. You ever see the coin guy? This guy's great. He could sell the shit out of coins. This guy's. And so he's selling the, I forget which one it was, some eagle woman on a mountaintop with rays of sunshine behind her head, whatever. And it was a coin from like 1869.
Okay. So that's a thing that's old.
But it was a reproduction.
Yeah. Okay.
But it had 1869 on it.
Well, because
so it's like, is an original 1869 plate?
Yeah.
And they remade the coins.
Right.
And of course, it was out of the San Francisco Mint. At the time, the San Francisco Mint was remaking these coins because the Mint in Washington, D.C. couldn't keep up, and they were trying to raise money for the war. And so, if you got an S on this particular coin, it makes it worth a lot more than if it had a D or wherever there's another Mint in the United States. And he had like 500 of these coins. And they're in uncirculated, perfect. Yeah. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, well, wait a minute.
What?
You're selling coins from 1869. They're actual coins from 1869. I could say this is an 1869 coin, but it's not.
No.
It was printed last week. Right. But its date is 1869.
Right, it's a replica. It is, right? There is a qualification to it. So that's exactly what it is. It's a qualification. It wasn't made in
1889. So dogs are going crazy because it's fixing a storm. Nowhere on the coin does it say 2021 or 2000. It is an actual 1869 coin.
But it wasn't made in 1869. Because that's one, if you're on pawn.
And it was like, you can only buy three of them. They were $529.
They would have
piece.
Somebody, listen, they'd have somebody with a magnifying eyeglass thing, right? And they look at it.
According to Coin Man, you couldn't even tell.
No, you can. You look at it and go, oh, you see, this is on Pawn Stars. They'd look at it and they go, yes, now this looks like an original, but this is actually a freshly minted replica. It's worth a lot because it's been, but it's not as worth it. This is a storyline for.
Yeah, I don't know. They're sitting on coins because they had like the entire John F. Kennedy.
Yep.
1969 thing where the silver was in it and blah, blah, blah.
I got one of those.
And they had all those coins and those were original.
Yeah.
They weren't reproduced.
I got originals that worth a lot.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but now you can buy more because they've been sitting on them. The one thing that I will tell you through all this cryptocurrency, all this crap is gold still seems to be the standard, gold and silver.
Not in the crypto world. And that's the other thing.
No, but that's one thing
we leverage it off of. We're not even doing that. Think about it. Think about how we print off. We were supposed to, right?
Do you ever think how we even figured out why gold is like
because people the standard? Wanted it.
I know, but who? But somewhere, some guy had to find something in the dirt and go, this right here.
Yeah. All right.
And of course, you had to make a point. Like diamonds, for example.
Yeah, they're beautiful.
Diamonds are worth a lot, but do you know that diamonds are plentiful?
Yes.
There is like more diamonds than you'd ever, but they hold on to them. It's OPEC.
Right.
They're holding on to the diamonds and they let them go at a small amount to increase the value of diamonds. And now you can make diamonds. You can't even tell.
Like at home, like home brewing.
There should be a home diamond kit you could buy for Christmas. You can make your own diamond and glass cutters, guys can't even tell the difference between a real diamond and a fake diamond anymore.
Well,
right?
Remember when the cubic zirconium came out?
Well, you could tell a difference. Gemologists cannot tell the difference between.
Right.
Because now you can make the perfect diamond, and it's a real diamond.
Yeah, but it's a synthetic.
Yeah. But gold, some dude found a piece of gold.
Yeah,
is just flipping weird. Found a piece of gold. There had to be some dude.
Well, it's not some dude.
And said, this has got to be worth something. It's super heavy. It's super good. And we know by mining processes that gold is hard to find.
No. But go back. The part of the way that we knew it is that the most ancient times, gold, that's when they figured it out. Whether it's the Aztecs or whatever, they put their kings and queens in gold.
Yeah.
And so I mean, my point is, we didn't figure this out in the Great Gold Rush. So we've known.
I'm talking about the first dude.
Like the very first.
I said, I got an idea. I found this really weird stuff.
But see, that's a good example. They didn't go, it's worth a lot. They were like, it's pretty.
Yep.
Oh, look how shiny it is. It's pretty. Ooh, I'll make jewelry out of it instead of rocks.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
and then they went, you know, and then people were like, oh, where did you? Well, this is from this rock that I have.
Yeah.
Right? But there's not a lot of those rocks.
Yeah.
And as time goes on, there's less and less and less. And now we have Gold Rush.
There you go.
And the point with the treasury, it was supposed to always be 1-to-1.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
There was the dollar value. We printed dollars opposite what the gold was. So there was a 1-to-1 you could go back to it.
How do we go from rocks to cryptocurrency?
We're printing money like it's nothing. And because of that, right? The dollar itself used to be directly tied back to. Now it's our perception of it.
Yeah.
It's just,
I know, right?
Right? So okay. Now, but hang on with me. We're about to go to crypto. So you're like, oh, that amount in my bank account that says dollars, I think it's worth this much, and it allows me to buy all these things. So the people in cryptocurrency are like, shit, if you can do that, why don't you do it?
There will be a time where you'll be able to pay through your brain.
Well, no.
If we get power, you mean?
Brain
energy? I should just tap your head.
Oh, well, yeah.
I don't need a card. It should be something like, I know what I got in my head.
Oh, you know what
boom.
That is?
What's that?
That's if you had your vaccination, Bill Gates has put you a chip in there. You can just tap your arm up.
No, not even a... No, I mean, I think our minds will be able to...
Oh, think it.
Think it. We can already think things. We can just think cryptocurrency. It's not
can
even...
we think as much as we want?
Like, what's your brain worth?
Yeah. That would actually work, because certain people would be able to... Yes. And instead of earning money, right? Instead of, here's how to earn...
You would always know what you have just right there. It would just be something embedded in your head. Not even a chip. It'd just be in your brain.
Okay, we need
to. My head's going to explode. Talk about one of our great sponsors. I'm going to let the dogs out.
Speaking of money, if you're in a world, actually, he does cryptocurrency. He doesn't like it, but he knows it. John Gray, my financial advisor and advisor with Driscoll Gray, is amazing. He can tell you all about cryptocurrency. He can tell you about Bitcoin if you need to be in it, but he also can help you manage your taxes, manage your debt, manage your savings, your kids' college savings account, all of it. He's absolutely fantastic, and he takes into account your entire life, not just your retirement, not just your debt, not just your savings. Go to his webpage today. He's got great market insights every day. It's DriscollGray.com, DriscollGray.com.
Tony Curry Radio, your home for Curry and Claypo in the mornings. Classic rock, the bone all day long. You can hear the Curry and Claypo show exclusively here on the Tony Curry Radio app. 7:30, 9:30 every Monday through Friday. And again, from 6 to 8 later on tonight. Tonight, Dark Side of the Pooch with Dr. Rab Stewart. We're going to be talking about pets and sweaters. You ever dress your pets?
Never. I put antlers. I tried to get antlers around one of the dogs, like the little.
Yeah.
It didn't work. That didn't work. Plus, I've had big dogs.
You know the
dogs.
Name of that dog in Dr. Seuss's How the Grinch Stole Christmas. You know the name of that dog, right?
What?
It's Max.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. The one that's got the antlers. That's why people put antlers on their dogs. No, I was asking him questions. We do mutt mail. If you go to TonyCurryRadio.net, TonyCurryRadio.net, to become a bonehead, just write an email question to Dr. Rab Stewart, and I'll read it on Dark Side of the Pooch. Monday night's 8 o'clock, and someone asked the question. It's weird because... You know, we always say, well, animals shouldn't be left in cars. If it gets below freezing, we shouldn't leave our animals outside, including our cats. And I'm like, they got a stinking coat on. So if it's like, I took my dog for a ride yesterday, it was 74 degrees. And my daughter's like, we can't leave the dog in the car. I said, 74 degrees. Sun's not out. He'd be fine for 10, 15 mm-hmm. minutes. So then I was 90. I wouldn't be even bringing him along. So I was always wondering. Because I know some pets or some pet owners believe that their animals get cold.
Oh, I see. Yeah, well, if you have a Mexican hairless dog, yes.
How do you know?
Because they're shivering.
Well,
what a dog.
Maybe they're just scared.
No, they're shivering. You ever seen
But I've seen some animals with sweaters on, and they're panting.
Well, yeah, because then you're just a dumb pet owner.
It's because they were outside, and they just went for a walk, but now they're cold. But then I've also seen dogs pant next to the fireplace. I'm like, well, get your dumb ass up and move on the other side of the room.
Oh,
you know how dogs will go outside and sunbathe?
Yeah.
Well, Would you do that with a jacket on?
No.
Okay, well, animals ain't real smart then.
Yeah, well, my Labradors used to lay in the summer on the driveway. It's like 100 and whatever 20 degrees.
Why? Yeah.
Because they're dumb.
And then what do? They go to your pool.
Because they're dumb.
And they sit on the
Oh, Sunday. Maybe that's it because they go to the pool. So what did Dr. Rab say? We don't know
yet. He said, no, it was okay to do that.
Yeah. Like, have you ever seen, like, little Italian greyhound whippets? They're like, their feet are the size of my pinky.
Yeah.
They got no meat on them.
Yeah.
But
I've never seen a dog so cold that it's shivering.
Oh, I have. You don't have, well, your dog's got hair. Go look at a little tiny, little, like, greyhoundy, little tiny
thing. What about a hairless cat that's being breastfed on a Delta flight? Should I have a sweater on?
Yes. And mittens. Need mittens on that, dude.
I told that story to my 9-year-old. I don't know why in the hell I did that.
Because, yeah.
They were talking about ugly cats. Oh, I went over to my director of programming, and he's got 3 cats.
3? Okay.
Well, his girlfriend has got 3 cats.
Okay, well, that's okay because there's 3.
And he's getting the wrath of these cats because he's the new guy.
Oh, and cats are, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, dogs will piss and stuff, but cats will just.
Cats are just damn mean.
Yeah.
And if you have a little anxiety.
Oh, they smell it. They know it.
They know you're scared, and they'll hop up on the bed like in the middle of the night 3 or 4 times. If you're a light sleeper and you have anxiety, you're totally freaking out.
Yeah. They just jump on your head.
Yeah. Hey, something I wanted to pass along. I've been taking Nicoderm, the patches.
Oh, that explains a lot.
I started on Saturday. Well, I'm back on the dip today.
Yeah, I was going to say. Wait.
I've got one on right now.
And you're dipping?
Yeah, it's crazy. Don't ever sleep with those on.
To create some weird thing?
Oh, man.
First of all, I don't smoke, so I don't have to worry about that.
Dude, but you should put a Nicoderm patch on just one night and just go to bed with it. Just
what does it do?
You have
like lucid dreaming?
Yeah, you have some really weird, bizarre, crazy ass. And it's like, I forgot to take mine off last night. I took a shower, and it was so smooth I didn't feel it when I was washing my shoulders. And so I'm laying there in bed, and then I realized it was on. I thought, for sure it's not going to make me do anything squirrely. And evidently I got up and walked around last night.
Really?
Yeah. Because my daughter said something like, why'd you get up in the middle of the night? I said, I didn't get up in the middle of the night. She goes, yeah, you did. And I was like, I did. And she's like, yeah. And I was like, it was Nicoderm.
Really? Is that did you read on the, label?
No, I just put it on.
No. You should now go back and Google. Can it cause lucid dreaming and sleepwalking?
Probably. I talked to a couple other people this morning. They're like,
same thing.
You're supposed to take that off.
What, did you take 12 Ambien with it too? Okay.
No, I stopped the Ambien.
No, you know what it is. Now
Ambien, that is like.
No, I know what it is. Here's what it is. You put the patch on. This was last night?
Yeah.
Did you chew yesterday?
No, I put the patch on yesterday morning. I started on Saturday. And I put another one on yesterday morning, and I just left it on all day.
Okay, did you chew all day?
No.
Right,
no,
there you go.
What?
Didn't cover you. You're going through withdrawal. That's why you're walking around.
Oh.
You know what I'm saying? And then this morning you're chewing again, and now you're fine.
Yeah, I'm double dosing today.
That's really bad. You should smoke a cigarette, too, while you're at it.
You know what? Don't give me any ideas. Don't forget later on tonight, Dark Side of the Pooch. We'll talk about dogs and cats wearing sweaters. Some people like to put the sweaters on with lights and stuff. It depends on the anxiety level of your pet. Right now, my Havanese is losing its flipping mind upstairs because it thinks it's going to rain, and it is. Just about 3 minutes, the dogs have that that sixth sense where they can kind of sense whether it's going to be raining or whatever, so it's freaking out upstairs. So something to think about. We're supposed to be getting some pretty bad storms here, so be careful throughout the day. Tomorrow night, Adaptogens, Adapt or Perish with Dr. Alex Hubline and Dr. Josh Claypo. It's a great show about business mainframes and how you need to adapt in your business in order to be successful. Livewire Wednesday on Wednesday. And then, of course, on Thursday, it's Austin Hanks. Blues Almighty is a fantastic show. And the Damon Johnson Show, which will be happening again coming up a little bit. There's my dog right there. All right, more classic rock and roll here on Tony Curry Radio.